All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat. This is Free Talk Friday. David, I have a quick question for you. How do you squeeze your toothpaste out of the tube?
From the bottom up, obviously.
From the bottom
up. I'm not an animal, Wes.
An animal that squeezes from the middle?
That's right.
I was reading this story by Jackie McMullen. It came out in 2008 in the Boston Globe. And in that story, she says that Ray Allen stopped living with one of his college roommates at UConn because he would squeeze the toothpaste from the middle. Does that surprise you at all?
No, it does not. Ray Allen is a very precise fellow. And that's a hell of an introduction on your part, by the way, because I think Ray Allen is going to be the subject of most of today's conversation, if not all of it. So, I remember reading that exact same article recently because I didn't know about it until Jackie Mack herself came out on a recent podcast with Zach Lowe. Talked about that article, and I was very interested in reading about it. And it really shed a lot of light on the kind of approach Ray Allen took, not just to basketball, but to life in general.
So the whole article is really interesting. It's about how he kind of lives with somebody like Paul Pierce, who just is basically the opposite of Ray Allen, just doesn't care about pregame rituals, just kind of flies by the seat of his pants. And Kevin Garnett, who's a big into pregame rituals, but like the opposite of Ray Allen, like just is like really introspective and brooding and everything like that. But for Ray Allen, like, it's just these little nuggets are what I love. Like, he would try to walk up the stairs and purposely leave like a stray scrap of paper on the stairs and just try to walk past it without letting it bother him. And then he wouldn't be able to get over it, and he would walk back down the stairs, grab the paper, throw it out, and then he could just kind of move on to his day in peace. And obviously he suffers from an extreme manner of OCD, right? But
I wouldn't say that's extreme compared to other very, you know, like there are cases of OCD that are debilitating that you're not able to live a functional full life as a result. So.
But I'll say I kind of relate to him on the scrap of paper thing. I'm very similar. I don't know how similar you are with that. But if I see a scrap of paper, I will throw it out.
I mean, I can get to that point. Sometimes I'll leave them there to see if anybody around the house will pick them up, you know, just to kind of test them and be like, you know, it irks me, but I leave it there in the hopes that somebody else will notice it. Other people around the house are not as observant, so no.
I think everybody around your house is doing the same test on each other.
No, unfortunately not. No, because I brought it up later. It's like, that's been there for 4 days. Who the hell is going to pick it up? And so maybe... maybe I'm a little bit more like Ray Allen than I'd like to admit.
Sounds like you're more like Kevin Garnett.
Possibly. A combination of both. The very worst of both of them.
I've got to say I do squeeze the toothpaste from the middle. I'm an animal. Does that, like, on a level from, like, on an evil spectrum, like, how evil am I?
No, that's not so bad. Okay. I mean... I know what people get hung up about it, but I really don't think it's a big deal.
Like, there's no like, nobody really for me to cares. Do it. I do it.
You don't care about how much toothpaste is in the tube until the very end, anyway.
And I don't even care about how much toothpaste is in the tube ever. Like, if it ever becomes a point where I have to like, struggle to get any toothpaste, if it becomes like an inconvenience to get more toothpaste out of the tube, I throw it out and I get more toothpaste. I've wasted so much toothpaste in my life. I am the quintessential like American who does not care. I know there's like children in like Africa and stuff that would just like kill for a tube of toothpaste. Like I get it. I know I'm wrong. I just if it becomes any bit of an inconvenience, I'm just done with it. I just get rid of it and I get a new tube of toothpaste.
Now, you know, interesting you should ask or bring this up as far as toothpaste is concerned, because it does segue into other things, not necessarily Ray Allen related, but about wasting leftovers. I have noticed an alarming trend as living in the city of Gainesville, where there's obviously a high population of college students. It seems like a lot of college-aged females in particular are ordering out at restaurants and leave behind a good amount of the food they order. Like, they don't believe in leftovers.
Hmm. In college?
Have you noticed this? Yes. Have you noticed this yourself?
Not in college. I remember like every time I went to a restaurant in college, the plan was this is two meals.
Okay.
Because like, a lot, like okay. if you go to
but that was that was that your plan? Was that your plan, or was that everybody that you plan?
I don't know. I feel like I it doesn't surprise me in Gainesville. I guess maybe that they're going with the I don't know who it is. Maybe it's Kim Kardashian or somebody else. But basically, like they'll take like hairspray or something, or to right. the restaurant, and they'll spray like half of their food with it, so that.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so that they basically it's portion control, like extreme. Like I can't eat this because it'll poison me. So like they'll take half of their food off the plate, and I'm sure that's not what the girls in Gainesville are doing, but maybe it's something in that way where they just they purposely only eat half or a little bit of it because of you know sorority duties or whatever. I don't know.
This is a thing.
Oh, I don't know.
This is a thing people are doing.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I think in general we're all pretty wasteful when it comes to restaurant food. Because you're talking about when you're going out to eat, right? You just see like
Are you talking about like a
cup of rice? Are you talking about like we're talking about like the entrees and stuff?
I mean, a good 50% of their food at the very least that is, I've seen left behind. Like I mean, on this past weekend, went out for breakfast one morning. And, you know, I love my starches and carbohydrates, the more the merrier. And they leave potatoes behind, like that's not a problem. They ordered an omelet, and seriously, it looked like 50% of that omelet was there. So they basically ordered an omelet, it comes with home fries, didn't touch the fries, left half of the omelet. Didn't look like they touched the bread that it came with either. So I'm thinking to myself, you're paying, what, $9, $10, $11 for an omelet, and you're going to eat maybe 30% of what comes with it? Unbelievable. Like they just left it behind.
Meal. That's a whole meal.
That's absolutely. I mean, not even getting into the argument about whether or not you can save that food to eat it for yourself later or whether or not you give it to somebody. Like, I mean, even if you see somebody that's in need of food, a homeless person that might be in need of food, it just seems so wasteful. Like the very cost of it. I mean, it seems like they don't value the hard-earned dollar. And I know I sound like a curmudgeonly old fellow, you know, but at the same time, it's like it's just shocking to me that you'd go out, spend X amount of money, order all this food, and then not eat any.
Well, they're doing it. They're going not because of the food, right? You're seeing like a table full of people that are making it a social gathering. I feel like the food is almost just secondary to them.
For that, you go to a Starbucks or something like that. If you just want to socialize, what the hell is the point? I mean, it's a family.
They don't know the value of a hard-earned dollar. Not yet, because they're in college. But they're going to learn. They're going to learn.
Trust me, when
they start making $25,000 a year with their first job, they're going to keep that omelet. And I don't know what – we could debate the reheat value of an omelet, but you probably just eat it cold at that point, right? Leftover omelet.
I've never had leftover omelet.
I don't know what to do with it.
I've never had leftovers. I mean, I just there's no such thing as a plate that goes unscathed. I mean, every time I've ever considered leaving food on the table, I hear my parents yelling somewhere when I was a kid and telling me I had to eat everything off that table. So, it's a lesson I've taken with me even into adulthood. But yeah,
I do have a bad habit of like leaving some stuff on the table.
There you go.
But like, if it is like, I won't leave like the pro. Like, if I have like half of like the entree left, I will take that home. But if it's like I said before, if it's like a cup of rice or like a couple of like, you know, a quarter of the potatoes that I had, like a quarter of the French fries, like what am I gonna do with that? I'll leave it. But
good advice for those. You can take those potatoes, add them next day, make like a little omelet or something like that. Very good stuff. Even a French fry. I've done that with French fries before.
See, that's a good idea. So my girlfriend, she's the opposite. Anything that's left on the plate, she will take home and be like, we can use it for something. But then ultimately we don't. Like nobody does anything with it. So we've taken like 5 pieces of broccoli home. And I'm like, why do we have 5 pieces of broccoli? She's like, well, we could put it in something. I'm like, we'll never put
pasta,
that in
rice.
It. Well, we just never do. We never do it because we just don't. She has this thing where she brings the leftovers and then she doesn't want to eat the leftovers. I'm like, they're your leftovers, and now I'm on the hook. Like, I ate all of my broccoli. You left 5 pieces of broccoli and insisted that we bring it home. This is yours. And now I have to deal with it. Because you're not going to eat them.
Very interesting. Yeah, that's another interesting phenomenon, the disgust with leftovers. Like, oh, if they last longer than 24 hours, then all of a sudden, you know, obviously that food's gone bad.
There's this, like that, which I think some people, I think, feel better about taking the leftovers home. Maybe because people like you judge them if they don't. But it's, but then they don't
go up to people at every table.
Jim Gaffigan has this great joke where he's like, "Yeah, leftovers are great." It's like, "Yeah, just box it up, put it in a bag, take it, and then I'll throw it away later." Like that's so many leftovers in my household end up that way. It's like you feel bad for throwing it away at the restaurant, but not as bad if you throw it away when it's like literally getting moldy because it's been in the fridge for a week. So we should probably talk about Ray Allen.
I mean, for whatever listeners might be left if you're still interested in our takes on food, feel free to email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com. Otherwise, yeah, we're gonna move on to the basketball portion of our program.
This is Free Talk Friday. It's a new thing that we're gonna be doing on Fridays, where we're not gonna hold ourselves to the deep analysis and the amazing content that we usually give you Monday through Thursday. This is gonna be just David and I to just air some things out, obviously, and then just talk about whatever we want to talk about. Some of it will be heat related, some of it won't. In this case, we do have something heat related that we really want to talk about. But first, quick reminder to make sure that you subscribe to the Locked On NBA channel. Brings you all 30 Locked On NBA podcasts in one easy to follow stream in your podcast app. Our recommendation: subscribe to Locked On Heat, and then go and subscribe to the Locked On NBA channel so that you can scout Miami's next opponent, keep up with the most interesting storylines in the league. Also, be sure to check out the NFL side, like Locked On Dolphins. The Dolphins play Monday Night Football. How did they get? They got 3 straight night games. This is why the NFL is failing. They're giving the Dolphins 3 straight night games. So
I don't think anybody knew what was going on, and they don't have that kind of flexibility of schedule. It's not like they can, you know, take off the 20 and 60 yeah. Lakers on any given night. You know, it's just not the same thing. You have to prepare for a Monday Night Football. It's so much more difficult. You can't just all of a sudden say, you know what, you don't get to play on Monday night because you're a terrible team.
They should.
So if you want to watch the 1-14 teams go up against, you know, 2-13 teams, that's just what happens sometimes.
Yeah, you can listen to it afterwards on Locked On Dolphins, the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Good segment. And I think you were trying to provide another segue earlier when you brought up Jackie Mack's article on Ray Allen, because for our listeners that may not be aware, friend of the program, Rowan Nutcarney over at the Crossover, had a fantastic Q&A with Mr. Ray Allen himself, the man responsible for saving Game 6 in the 2013 NBA Finals and helping bring Miami their third championship. Ray Allen recently talked to Rowan about a book called From the Outside, My Journey Through Life and the Game I Love, written by Ray Allen, co-authored by Ray. It's a book available by HarperCollins. You can pre-order it now on Amazon. Comes out, I think, in February, according to Rowan. So I'm hoping I might be able to get a review copy, and maybe we can talk about it later on point in the show.
Cool.
But for now, the book contains, as you might expect, a lot of information about his tenure with the Celtics. Of course, it's a hot topic. But as far as for the purposes of this show, it's about his tenure with Miami. And, you know, obviously things did not go perhaps as well as we had anticipated when his short stint with Miami. He was only there for 2 seasons, and obviously he went into retirement shortly afterwards. He debated coming back to the team, but at the same time, he does admit that it was a rebuilding team that was going in a little bit younger. LeBron had left, obviously. Chris Bosh was still with the team, although obviously he would wind up having injuries that would take him out of the lineup and perhaps even end his NBA career. So he had to consider what team he would join, and he was obviously looking to join a title contender. Eventually chose not to sign with anybody, although it seems like he's probably still capable of signing with a team. But for the purposes of this show, I wanted to talk about one thing in particular, where Rowan asked him about a recent comment from Dwayne Wade, which we probably should have brought up, but we just never had the time with all the game recaps and everything else. But Dwayne Wade, you know, in context of what's going on in Cleveland this year, they're obviously in the 4th year of LeBron's return to the Cavaliers. They've struggled somewhat. They're trying to find chemistry. Dwayne Wade, now with the Cavaliers, obviously has a lot to share with LeBron regarding their tenure together in Miami. And he was asked about how that Cavaliers team compared to the last year of the Miami Heat, the 2013-14 season, obviously the year before LeBron left. And Wade described that year as a bad marriage. And so Rowan asked him about the vibe on that team and what was tougher, what was that year tougher for most of the guys on the team? And so Ray answered, it certainly was tough on all of his players. Organizationally, I don't think they ever adjusted. Most of the guys, having gone to so many finals, me being an older player, having played a lot of basketball the last 5-6 years, organizationally and coaching-wise, they, being the Heat, just didn't adjust. We had the oldest team in the NBA, and on top of that, we had such a bad schedule. Every holiday, we were away from home. Every situation we were in, we were fighting to just stay above board, trying to figure out how to sleep or rest our bodies. We wore down, we were tired, and we were definitely tired at the end. We still were good, and we still made it to the finals. That's the end of that answer. So, obviously, it brings up a lot of things. And Rowan follows up with another question about how the organization didn't adjust. And Ray gets into it a little bit further, just basically looking at the Spurs model and that Miami followed the exact opposite. The Spurs model being one that is very advanced as far as resting players. You know, when as Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker continue to age, obviously Greg Popovich and the rest of the Spurs front office realized they'd have to take a different approach, resting those guys as they continued to get older so that they would be available later on in the postseason and at full strength. And it turns out, or it looks like at least, the Heat did not really, you know, follow that same practice. Apparently, they obviously Miami is all very well known for being a very rigorous, regimented team that they like pushing players into practice. I myself have seen them just doing shoot-arounds that normally are supposed to end at a particular time and honestly have lasted an hour or more past that point. So this team just continues to practice, work hard, even at points in time during the season when they might be able to shut it down a little bit, to rest guys so that they'll be available later on. And I think for me, this brought up a lot of interesting questions about the Miami Heat culture, their front office, their approach, and moreover, whether or not it just might not be one that works particularly well. What are your thoughts overall on Ray's comment and any implications about the Heat front office?
He's not wrong, right? Like, he's not wrong.
No, he's not.
And no. And we've heard this several times. We've heard that, you know, this isn't and even agents, you know, representing their players will know this. They'll be like, well, look, I'm not going to let you sign with Miami because you're going to flame out there. Because you can't handle the rigorousness of that. Like, that all comes down from Pat Riley, right? And that's part of the Heat culture. They know that not every player is made for the Heat culture. And Ray Allen was, right? But he was... Like, Ray Allen in year 8 would have loved Heat culture. Ray Allen in year 18, not so much, right? Because he's right. They needed more rest. But that's... You compared it to the Spurs. I wonder how long it took for the Spurs to realize that their guys needed rest. You know what I mean? Like, this is... You mentioned that Ray Allen was only there for a couple of years. I wonder if they would have had them for another year or two, if they would have realized, like, okay, we need to stop doing practices and long shoot-arounds, and we just need to, like, let these guys go out and play. But again, he's not wrong about anything, and it kind of comes off. I know a lot of Heat fans out there are like, oh, he's ripping the Heat, he's ripping the Heat organization, blah, 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 but... Everything he's saying is true. That team was done. That team got knocked out in the finals against the Spurs. I mean, it wasn't even competitive because that team was just so tired. LeBron famously got cramps. Like, that is just what... That team was worn down. So, yeah, they probably should have just rested them more. But at the same time, I don't know how much time they needed to figure that out. Like, it's easy to see that in retrospect. I wonder if Ray Allen said anything at the time, you know what I mean? But, again, he's not wrong about anything.
It seems likely that he did. I mean, I think we've heard rumblings that he kind of butted heads with Eric Spoelstra a little bit, probably voicing concerns about, well, maybe we should take a day off. Can't we just skip this practice? Do we really have to shoot around for the extra hour, whatever? You know, something to kind of provide a little bit more rest, because you know what? You can get burnt out. And we saw that in 13-14. That team did not look as engaged as they did. Look, maybe LeBron was already feeling pangs of remorse for having left Cleveland. Maybe he could have pushed that off a little bit longer, but it seemed like Miami kind of forced the issue. And you know, you wonder, you just question whether or not if they had been given more time, whether or not they would have figured it out. I don't think they would have. I think that's just the problem is Pat Riley has never made the adjustment. Pat Riley only knows one speed, and that's at full breakdown speed. And that was why he was effectively fired from the Los Angeles Lakers. You know, it's been reported and revealed after the fact that, you know, he didn't necessarily quit so much as he wasn't invited back, kind of like the way Frank Vogel wasn't invited back to Indiana. And while you could just say they didn't give him another contract, basically, you know, he was fired. And the same thing was the case with Riley. You know, the players, even Magic Johnson, you know, almost like an adoptive son to Riley, grew tired of Riley's constant pushing and nagging. And it wears on players. It wears on adults in particular, adult men that are at the peak of their physical careers. Like, it's like one of those differences between college coaches and why they fail to make the adjustment to the pros is because you can be an absolute total disciplinarian and authority figure at the collegiate level when you're guiding 18, 19-year-olds. Not so much when you've got a 25-year-old, 27-year-old, 30-year-old, or in the case of Ray, a 38-year-old who's been doing this for over half their lives. They don't need that pushing. They don't need that nudging.
Yeah, Riley has that whole the disease of more. I wonder if some of that feeds into this, where if a guy like Ray Allen or LeBron goes to the organization, it's like, look, I need to rest. I need more time with my family. I need more time to rest. And if Pat Riley's just like, no, this is what players do. And in the end, it's going to be better if they're working hard. And I wonder if that's part of the thing. Or look, and I don't want to give too much credit to Pat Riley, because Eric Spoelstra is ultimately the one that runs the team. And I'm sure he's the one that runs the practices. But he's a disciple of that school of Riley. So I wonder how much he's like that and is just trying to do the right thing. But at the same time, you've got a guy like Ray Allen who is so meticulous about the way he uses his toothpaste to the way he works out. You've got LeBron James, who is famously like a workout, just a gym rat, right? Like always in the gym trying to improve his body and doing and spending all this money on his body. And then all of a sudden these guys presumably come up and say, look, we need more rest. And then all of a sudden this organization within the span of throughout, like during the season, is supposed to just kind of cut back and say, no, we're going to change everything. I think there's a little bit of a revisionist history happening here with guys like Dwayne Wade and Ray Allen and even LeBron, people that might say that they needed more time, more rest, just because obviously by the time they hit the finals, it was clear that they were tired. But I wonder how clear that was going to be throughout the season, you know?
You know,
it's impossible to answer that.
Ray
Allen's not wrong, and I mean, he's not wrong about any of this. He's ripping the Heat organization, and he's not wrong about any of this. The Heat definitely handled that last year wrong. I mean, you can't argue that they didn't, right? Like the way that they performed in the finals, they went about that season the wrong way. That's inarguable, right?
But the counter argument is what you just mentioned, though, whether or not it's the disease of more, whether or not players were selfishly backing away from a system that they knew to work or might have adhered to on their own time, but chose not to do it because it was the organization pushing for it as opposed to their own.
I mean, I don't know. They just looked so tired. They looked just done.
They did.
Yeah, so I
wrote about this in early 2013, maybe early 2014, you know, that I wrote that LeBron was hurting this team because he did look like he was disinterested. Like there were moments there where you could tell he wasn't fully engaged. And it's hard to write that at the same time as you're at this peak of incredible fandom and you see him dominate other games. But there were moments there where he just was indifferent defensively, indifferent like energetically, like it just wasn't the same as it was during the first 3 years of his tenure there.
As arguably is the worst season of his career, right? Is that last season?
It was
Miami.
A tough one. Look, and I've seen comments on Twitter
season,
about this.
But yeah.
Yeah. You know, the Dwayne Wade maintenance program was very taxing. Like Dwayne Wade's never gonna admit this. But he kind of set the tone a little bit early, because I think from the response then from guys like LeBron in particular, maybe others on the team, is that, look, I have to carry a much bigger load now while Dwayne continues to rest his knees, sit out a number of games, and just generally not be as effective as he once was. I mean, that might have been one of the first dominoes to fall. Maybe the Heat culture, you know, kind of started the whole trend. But then, you know, they thought they were doing something good by shutting down Wade for a number of games. But that put a lot of pressure on other players. So it might be a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B as far as where the fault lies. But, you know, I was thinking about this whole Heat culture thing. Obviously, it's something that a lot of fans have embraced. Everybody, well, not everybody, but I think a majority of fans of any sport, of any team, loves to think of players being, you know, dedicated, constantly working for this supreme team goal of winning a championship. But that's absolutely unrealistic, first of all. And then secondly, I mean, this kind of mantra of working and working through it, sometimes it's better to work smarter than it is to work harder. And I think Miami hasn't been one of those teams that's able to make that adjustment. I wonder, you know, and I brought this up to you when I first suggested talking about this on the show. You know, it's one thing for this kind of culture to work when you're a player like James Jones that maybe has never been kept on a tight leash, you know what I'm saying? Or kind of forced to stick to a very tight regimen, and maybe has had too much slack given to them, and as a result, they just never have reached their potential as far as their athleticism. Maybe even a guy like Deion Waiters, he needed a little bit more structure than what he got in Oklahoma City when it was Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant running the show. But maybe it's something else when you're like a superstar level player, you know? We forced Shaquille O'Neal out. We forced LeBron James out. We forced Dwayne Wade out even after 13 seasons. And I know that there's a lot of factors going into why these players were forced out, but there's no denying that all these players left. You could say Shaq left and Wade left at the end of their careers or towards the tail end of their careers, but they still wanted to leave. They still had to be traded away. I wonder if you go back even further, whether or not you might have wasted the peak era of Alonzo Mourning's career. Maybe if you had taken it easy. Now, Alonzo was a ruthless, you know, fitness enthusiast. You know, like he was just ridiculous about it. I remember reading about when he was first diagnosed with before he was diagnosed with his kidney disease. He felt fatigue, and his response was, "Let me go work out for 3 hours." And he was driving back home to his house in Coral Gables and almost lost control of his car as he was leaving the American Airlines Arena because he blacked out and he was in such incredible pain. So that just goes to show you, like, Alonzo's not your typical person in any way, shape, or form. But at the same time, even that approach wound up being something that might have hurt him. I wonder if the Heat might have, you know, made a probably can go back. I was talking about players that they forced out. Tim Hardaway left here because he was not happy with his team. As much as we've done to try and repair that relationship, you know, Tim Hardaway was very pissed off the way Riley ran those practices, at having to meet certain criteria as far as your weight, your body fat limits are concerned. I mean, that just wears on you as you're approaching your 13th year or your 12th year of your career. At some point, you want to be given the benefit of the doubt that you've done enough to prove it. And from Riley's perspective, he feels like he's added years to people's careers. Depending on who you ask, it's the exact opposite. And maybe it's just a guy like Zoe or a guy like Charles Oakley who loves to work and work and work and work. But that's not everybody. In fact,
right. I think that's why you need those players like Alonzo Mourning and then Dwayne Wade throughout most of his career, and then LeBron James, guys who just like, and Giannis has them obviously, who just buy in, right? And as far as you were talking about, like all stars, like those big players that you need to win championships, you just need them to buy in. And LeBron bought in for 3 years, and maybe not so much that fourth year, but for 3 years he bought in. He craved it. Like if you look at what he had in Cleveland, it was the opposite, right? Like nobody was
holding him accountable
for everything. I mean, if you believe most of the stories, like it was just that.
No. But I don't think it was. I mean, we're talking about two different aspects, like the flip side of the same coin here. Like Heat culture has great things. Like there's great things about Heat culture, a dedication, a commitment to winning, and a singular focus on what you're doing. But there could be a dark side to it, you know. In my opinion, I think sometimes you just push players too much, okay, and they're not going to respond.
So maintaining that structure, but not have, but just basically what you're saying is you maintain the structure, you maintain the culture and the singular focus, but in general, as far as training and workouts and all this stuff, the Heat have a tendency to push guys too hard.
They have to be flexible, and I think that's, I've criticized Riley before, and I think that's part of the problem is that he just doesn't, especially at 70 plus years old, he doesn't know how to be flexible.
Well, I think he's coming from an era where NBA players weren't taking it upon themselves, right? Like, he's coming from an era when NBA players were smoking and drinking beer in the locker room. And NBA players aren't that way anymore. Like, NBA players famously just don't even, like the stars in this league.
They don't even drink.
They don't even drink. They don't go out. They don't party. Like, there is no more. It's not the Gilbert Arenas era anymore. It's James Harden. Right. It's James Harden is now. He went from partying with the Kardashians to, like, I don't want any of this stuff. Right. That great Lee Jenkins story. He is. LeBron just he stays basically. He still does his things, but he doesn't really go out during the season. Dwayne Wade, we know, doesn't go out during the season. Like, this is what he does. This is what this era of players do. That's how they act. That's how they handle their business and their profession. It used to not be the case. So maybe Riley is coming from that, and that's kind of the Heat culture, is like, let's kind of correct for that older era of NBA players. But players now, they just sort of take it up. There's just so much money and so much endorsement deals and all this stuff at stake. You know, one bad moment on social media could just end a player's career. career off the court, right? It could just...
I don't want to be here anymore.
And that what?
I don't want to be here anymore.
Right.
Or yeah, is there, what is it that Eric Bledsoe wrote?
Yeah, you don't want to be at the hair salon anymore.
Sure.
It just would end their career, right? And so that would be... I don't know. I feel like the players now, they just take it more upon themselves to be in that conditioning. And if they don't, they're just not going to be good players. And you're right. Some of these players need that structure and need to be pushed that... Like, Deion Waiters needed to be pushed that extra mile, right? But how much longer does he need to be? Right. If Deion Waiters were to be tomorrow, evolve from what he is now to an all-star player, right? How much more... At that point, I think a lot of these players sort of take it upon themselves. And you look at a team like the Golden State Warriors, they kind of have that singular focus, but they are way more flexible. They do allow their guys to just not practice or whatever. They kind of let them the players really determine the schedule there, which I think is why they're going to be really successful. And I say this to this day, Pat Riley's biggest mistake was not giving in to LeBron's demands. You're right, he was inflexible. Like, you at some point, you need to recognize this is the best player on the planet, possibly the greatest player of all time. And I don't, like, whatever demands he had, whether it be letting his friends come onto the team plane or the team bus or sit courtside or whatever, if he didn't want to practice as much, he's just give it to him. Just give it to
him.
And
that's gone on for 30-plus years, man. Like, you're asking whether or not an extra year or two might have been enough for him to figure it out. I remember reading about the Showtime era. He didn't allow players' wives, and he had his wife, Chris, talk to, you know, James Worthy's wife, talk to Magic's wife, talk to Kareem's significant other, and be like, listen, you guys got to stay the hell away from the players while the season's going on. And of course, being the Lakers, having gone to, what was it, like 8 out of 9 or 8 out of 10 championship runs? I mean, think about that. They kept that thing going for as long as they did. And you could argue that, yeah, it was because of that singular focus. Yeah, maybe. But at the same time, maybe it was just because they had James Worthy, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Magic Johnson on that team. You know, maybe these guys were talented enough where you didn't need to necessarily push them all the way. And look, again, there's the flip side of it. You know, he got Magic Johnson to become the player he was supposed to be. You know, he had him. He knew what buttons to push on Magic. As he, you know, they talked about him posting Larry Bird's stats for the game before, knowing that Magic was going to go out there and try to match or surpass those. That works. That works for a brief amount of time. It doesn't work in year 8.
At recent flip side of that is what's going on in Cleveland now. I don't... The Heat... This Cavaliers team is old, but they're just as old as that Heat team was. And that... The Miami Heat would have never been last in the league in defense at any point in the season. This Cavaliers team probably needs to work a little bit harder, right? So you need... It's really hard to find that balance.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's because of the fit or because of the roster pieces.
If you took all of these players and put them in Miami, they would not be last in defense. There's no way.
I don't know about that, man. I don't know. Last.
I'm saying last. Like, they would have been. You're right. They might have been like
very bad.
20th, 22nd, like in the middle, maybe below average, but not dead last by a wide margin.
Ty Lue is not Eric Spoelstra.
The biggest mistake of LeBron's career is leaving Eric Spoelstra. Like, outside of all the other stuff, he has never worked with another coach like Eric Spoelstra.
There are still people that argue that Spoelstra was not a good coach.
And those people are wrong.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I don't think he's underrated anymore. I think if you know basketball, obviously the fire spoke chance have quieted it down significantly. Last year may have proven to be the best of his, you know, 8-year career. Now we're going on, I think this is his 8th season. I think, 3. Yeah, so this is his 8th season as a head coach, and last year might have been the best one as far as making lemonade out of lemons, you know. Obviously he had a lot of talent in that roster during the Big Three era, but I think even then he had to understand how to be an iron fist in the velvet glove, you know, how to balance being a constant authoritarian with maybe taking the foot off the gas a little bit, as far as managing egos. Now, as far as practice sessions and shoot arounds and things like that, apparently that's just not his style. And again, it may have cost his team a chance at a third consecutive championship may cost his team a future championship. You know, it's a lot of revisionist history. It's hard to kind of say what might have been the case if they had done things differently. But I think, look, I mean, even that postseason conference, a press conference from Pat Riley, do you have the guts? You know, you don't leave after the first time you see the back door. You don't go through it. You stick around. You work. Well, LeBron didn't seem to care, and he went to three straight finals afterwards. So at some point, you have to realize that what's worked in some aspects doesn't work in every aspect, and you're going to burn players out. It's just a fact of life. And again, it works for players that need that push, that need it initially, but it doesn't work for everybody. I mean, you have to be flexible enough to recognize it. You have to be self-aware enough to say, you know what, these guys are 35 or pushing more. In some cases, they need a little break. You know, Shane Battier retired because, I mean, it was probably a very difficult 3-year run for him, pushing himself at the limit of his physical capabilities. Rashard Lewis broke down. Basically, he wanted to keep playing. Unfortunately, he broke down. So, I mean, he's in the big three now as far as the big three league for retired NBA players. But at the same time, you wonder whether or not he might have been healthy enough to chip in. You know, Udonis has never been quite the same player. You know, maybe it even exacerbated Chris Bosh's health situation.
Never know. I mean, it's like, we're not in the best position to tell the Heat how to run their organization, but...
Yes, we are. We told them to sign Dion, and we can tell them what to do with anything.
That's true. We are usually one step ahead of them.
Absolutely.
And they do need to... And if they're looking for a template, look at what Golden State is doing. I mean, what you said earlier, I think, work smarter, not harder. And I don't think that's ever been Pat Riley's way of going. I think he's always been work harder and dunk your head into an ice bucket challenge. But it's... At some point, you kind of have to catch up with what's going on because, like I said, the whole thing is the Heat are famously old school, but it could be to a detriment, and it is. It seems like at some point, and you do have to just give in to and be more flexible. You can't just be so rigid. And I do think that his whole disease of Moore has infected him. I mean, I think his ego has gotten in the way at some points. We've seen it with LeBron. We've seen it with Dwayne Wade, and I think he is so egoless that he has an ego. He's like, I don't have an ego. I have the least amount of ego that you've ever seen. It's kind of how he acts sometimes to me.
That's about right. That sounds perfectly in line.
If you haven't done so, just a reminder, if you could take a moment, leave a 5-star rating and review for our show Locked On Heat on iTunes. It'd be appreciated and helps others discover the show. You want to talk about this Utah Jazz game coming up a little bit?
Yeah, it should be an interesting one. Our boss, David Locke, obviously has a great show for anybody interested. Listen to Locked On Jazz and, of course, the rest of the Locked On NBA network. But, yeah, it should be a good game. Look, obviously, I think the matchup between Whiteside and Gobert should be the one that everybody focuses on. You know, in our most recent podcast, we talked about the quote-unquote Whiteside problem that, you know, some of our listeners have pointed out to us in the past. It's an interesting one. A lot of Jazz fans, I think, are even more isolationist than Heat fans. Like, as much as Heat Twitter has liked to have banded together since 2010, the Utah Jazz fans seem perpetually, I don't know, mistreated, and they're so absolutely defensive.
Mike D'Antoni came out and was like, I don't like playing in Utah because I don't have enough Starbucks. Like, everybody just craps
on Utah. I'm sure he'll
get
booed next time. Yeah, I'm sure he'll get booed next time.
They have the worst offense in the NBA, or the second worst offense in the NBA, something like that.
They are struggling.
They play at an insanely slow pace, which is going to be interesting because Miami's coming off of a couple of games where they wanted to pick up the tempo a little bit. And it'll be interesting to see if they can kind of dial it back, especially if they're playing with... We don't have word yet if Justice Winslow... By the time you're hearing this, we might know who the starting lineup is, but as of time recording this, Justice Winslow might still be starting at power forward. If that's the case, he's going up against, I presume, Derek Favors, who is a very large person. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But I think the Heat... Look, the Heat should win this game. I think that they've got a night of rest. They're coming off of a good win against Phoenix where it seems like they figured some things out. This is a game I expect them to win because Utah is struggling and Miami really needs to... This is the time where they kind of have to kick it in die gear, and I think they're coming off of a good win.
I mean, there's going to be some challenges there, right? Who's their starting backcourt now? It's Ricky Rubio.
No.
And Rodney Hood? Yeah. Ricky's your starter?
Yeah, Ricky Rubio and Rodney Hood. Sorry, yep.
Okay, it is Rodney Hood. Okay, I thought he was injured earlier in the season. I wasn't sure if he had bounced back.
I think he's playing. Donovan Mitchell plays a lot. My favorite. I'm very excited to see Donovan Mitchell.
Joe Ingles. Is their starting small forward. Yeah, he's some. I've seen some issues with him as far as him not taking or being as aggressive with his shot. That should be an interesting matchup for Josh Richardson.
He's in a very Joe Ingles is in like that James Johnson zone where it's like, all right, well, everything you did last year was kind of just gravy. Now we kind of expect you to do that and more. And Ingles might be kind of just trying. He might be struggling with the pressure of that a little bit, like James Johnson, I think, was at the start of the season. I think he's starting to come out of that a little bit. James Johnson's been playing well the last couple games.
In shooting in particular. I mean, yes. Like, I hate patting myself on the back, but it seems like I noticed when he's not thinking about his shot, it's so much better for him because he just doesn't have time to overthink these things. And look, you know, we as fans, as people who cover the game, it's like you expect them to not think too much about it, and why should that be a problem thinking about it? But you get in your own head sometimes, and sometimes you just need to be more read and react and flow with it. And it seems like when Johnson's not thinking about his shot, when he just lets it fly, the thing is money. You're right. For the last couple of games, it's been very, very nice. And I hope he keeps that up. Now, the Rubio-Dragic matchup, I'm trying to remember with the last time we faced the Timberwolves. I know we beat the Timberwolves twice last year. I want to say that Dragic got the best of that matchup, and he should continue to do so. Rubio, obviously a very good defensive point guard. He's long-limbed, sharp passer. Still not a good scorer. That's going to be probably something that's going to dog him for the rest of his career.
I think he's leading Utah in scoring, which is not...
Is he really?
I think he's like at 15 points a game, he's their leading scorer. Like, Utah does not have a lead scorer.
It feels like
they're missing something.
Well, Favors isn't much of a scorer either. He just doesn't get a lot of touches.
Gordon Hayward's no longer there, and I think that's the problem, is that they have not filled in that. I thought Rodney Hood might be able to step up. I think they should just hand over the whole offense to Donovan Mitchell. He's ready. That dude's ready. Just give it to him. I don't know.
They can't do that.
Why not?
I'm curious. Why? Because he's a rookie, and they've got other higher product. Like Rodney Hood's entering a contract year.
Let him go. You know, Donovan Mitchell's the best offensive player on that team already.
He changes the approach of the team. No, hey, listen. I love Mitchell. The curse words flying from my mouth on draft night when they traded ahead to acquire him. I was not a happy camper. Although I love you, Bam. But at the same time, I was really hoping that Mitchell would slide there. I didn't think it was possible. Both you and I had thought, top 10 for sure, based on everything that we had seen. Maybe there were questions about his size, and then he wound up dunking on everybody in summer league. So, Dennis Smith Jr., he slid to 9th.
Yep.
And I'm sure there are probably like 8 teams ahead of them kind of going, well, I probably should have picked somebody else.
The Lakers are wondering why they didn't pick De'Aaron Fox over Lonzo Ball at this point. Or Dennis Smith Jr.
Wow. I can't believe we're at that point. Yeah. Look, the Lonzo Ball situation. I haven't covered a Lakers game yet. I'm looking forward to it. You haven't covered the Lakers either,
no.
I think.
No, not yet. I'm very much looking forward to it.
I just don't know what to make of this. And I think it feels like the consensus amongst a lot of, media types is that I don't mind Lonzo Ball. Like, I don't know him personally. I'm not probably ever going to know him personally. But at the same time, I just wish we could look at what he does without the noise. And the noise is inescapable at this point. Because either you're a Lakers fan and you will defend anything he does, whether it's a mistake or not, and you'll defend it to the death. And that's the wrong approach, because it just makes him unlikable. And then, of course, there's the factor with his family. There's all the attention that they've built up, the shoe line, the potential TV show, everything that comes with it. It's just too much. And at some point, a rookie, you just want to look at their game and say, okay, he's got room for improvement. And there's no doubt he's got room for improvement. Let's not talk about the scoring or the wonky jump shot or anything like that. He's struggling offensively. Hell of a passer. He makes a lot of careless passes too. And that's just part of who he is. I don't think he's a bad player. I think he has potential. I think he definitely has room for growth. But it's just so hard to separate the noise from the actual substance.
I think it would have been better for him if he would have not been drafted by the Lakers.
Oh, my God. Absolutely. He should have gone to, like...
If Philadelphia would have taken him at, like, 3 or whatever, like, just get away.
I see, but
get
even
away
that,
from
I think...
Southern California.
maybe. I think he probably would have thrived like in a mid-level team, or maybe even a team coming off a playoff run, so that he could kind of just learn the pace. And it's like, you know what? You're expecting too much out of these guys that are like 19, 20 years old to be able to dominate at a high level, plus handle all the attention that they get off the floor, the constant media scrutiny. That's a lot for anybody. It's a lot for a 35-year-old to handle. It's certainly too much for a 20-year-old.
It is funny, not everybody's how obviously LaVar Ball is ridiculous, but it seems like at first there was a little bit of a pushback on Lonzo Ball, right? Because you're like, oh, he's part of this family. Like, it's the basketball Kardashians. Like, I don't like any of these guys. But then you kind of realize that Lonzo Ball, like, he's a little bit more self-deprecating. He kind of like acts in a way that he's kind of like, this is my dad. I don't agree with what he's doing, but it's my dad. Like, what am I supposed to do about this? And I think a lot of people come back and they're like, and they're saying this, like, I wish Lonzo Ball could just escape this because it's not fair to him. And I agree with all of that, but it's funny how, I had a point and I lost it there for a second. We're on the Lonzo Ball. Everybody wants Lonzo to succeed, right? Everybody, because you see what's
I don't know about that.
You don't. Well, I think a lot of media types, I'll say, kind of want Lonzo to succeed because it would be really, number one, be great for the league, right? And number two, it's, you look at what he can do on the court. Like at UCLA, he looked great, right? And the way he played at UCLA and what he was able to do to that team was a lot of fun. It was fun to watch, period. Like, despite everything that was going off the floor, he is fun to watch when he's doing well. And it's just everything that, like, all these expectations from the dad and the fans and the media and all this stuff, it just kind of weighs on somebody. But everybody's really kind of behind Lonzo here, it seems like.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, it's just, it's so much of it, as I get older and watch the league more and more, so much of a player's individual success really has to do with their fit on a team.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just enough to be talented at the collegiate level. That means almost absolutely nothing. It's like, you know, for all that we like about Dennis Smith Jr., how much success would he actually find if the rest of the team was any good? He wouldn't be getting nearly as many touches. If it wasn't Dirk Nowitzki at the end of his career, who doesn't really care about putting up 20 points or 25 points per game, would Dennis Smith still have the kind of success that he's having? You know, it's a lot less to do with talent and a lot more about fit and perhaps even, to our larger point, perhaps a little bit of culture and trying to maximize what a player can and can't do. You know, look at a guy like in Orlando. I can't help but think of Mario Hezonja, super talented and had all the support in the world because he was cocky and brash and he did so much at the European level. He'd been playing since he was, you know, a sperm cell. He'd been playing at the professional level in Europe. And then he comes to the Magic. It's like, dude, sorry, you can't defend worth a damn. You can't really do much else. And unfortunately, your work ethic kind of sucks. You're not going to get any burn until you actually figure it all out. And he's not going to get any burn, and he can't figure it out because he doesn't. So it's a really terrible catch-22 there.
All right, before we wrap this thing up, what was your favorite moment from the week, Heat-related? I got mine, if you're not ready.
Go for it.
Hassan Whiteside just ending Mike James. I know, we talked about it after the game, and like, he did the stare down, then he was late to get back on the other side of the floor, whatever. I loved it. That was a moment where you act like a NBA vet, and this guy is supposed to be in the D-League, and he tries to dunk on you, and he just goes straight up in the air and knocks the crap out of him. Just knocked him down. And then he just sits there, and he stands over him and just stares him down. And Mike James did not try that again and will not ever try that again. And that was I remember this week. That's what I'm going to remember from this week. That was awesome.
My response to that is, what would Tim Duncan do? He wouldn't have done
that. You immediately made me feel bad.
Yeah, Tim Duncan would not. Like the stories about Duncan taking big men coming into the league and being, no, don't do that. Wow, he's guarding them. He's telling them, no, don't move your feet there. You want to position yourself so they can get the outlet ball to you. It's like, that's ridiculous. You know, and that's just having that kind of supreme confidence in your ability, which is, you know, unmistakable. Like, he was an excellent player, without a doubt. But just to be able to coach guys up on the floor, can you imagine that? Like Whiteside, that instance.
But doesn't even have that capability. Like, he doesn't even, he's not anywhere near that. So he's just go the other way. Like, what's Whiteside right, gonna
maybe
tell?
Maybe I'm being joyless.
What's Whiteside gonna tell Marquise Chris? Hey, you want to make sure every time you touch the ball, don't pass it. Just put up a hook shot 11 feet away from the basket.
No, maybe tell him, you know, next time you come at me, take off a little bit later so that you can draw the foul or something like that. It's good advice, but to stare you down.
I don't think he knows how to do that.
The kid's making. Well, you know what, Wes?
Whiteside is really good at putting his hands up.
Figure it out. He's got to figure it out how to be a better veteran because you know what? This team needs him. And anyway, favorite moment.
Okay.
My favorite moment of the same game, watching Phoenix Suns fans welcome back the Dragon. Like that just, like, I know I've sounded like I'm on a real big Goran Dragic kick over the first few weeks of the season.
Yeah, have you and Alana I gotta host like a game show between you and Alana to see like who knows the most Goran Dragic facts or something like that.
All right, that's enough of that. All right, you know, I'm sorry. I'll tone it down if I'm getting comparisons.
I'm the one with the signed Goran Dragic picture. Just want to say that.
Wow, why did you get that?
I never told you about this?
No, never.
Oh, I have a signed Goran Dragic picture. Yeah, really? The Miami Heat were doing like a trivia
giveaway
thing. Yeah. I answered the trivia question and they sent me the thing. That was it.
Spectacular, that's awesome.
I feel like it's cheating because I know so much more about the Heat than like a lot of people that are like just like on Twitter or whatever. They were doing it
this
in the Miami
recently?
Heat. This was last season. They had a Miami Heat chat room.
You work for the Heat.
I know.
you shouldn't have been eligible. Like, somebody should have been like, wait a minute, did we just give it to one of our employees?
I wonder if this was before I started writing for them, but it was...
you can't win the lottery if you work for the lottery. You won the lottery, man. That's unfair.
I have this... It's a Goran Dragic. He's going up with a lefty layup, and I love it because it's what... Of course, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, and he's going up. It's like this little finger roll layup. And I love it because he's going over Elfrid Payton, who at this point is getting out of the way, right? Because he's like, I blew it. But Serge Ibaka is coming from behind trying to block it. And you could tell he's got no chance at it. You know my feelings about Serge Ibaka. So
they're all positive, I know.
and it's a very... I'll take a picture and I'll show it to you. Pretty cool.
Nice. I think you should give it away to one of our listeners.
I thought about it, but then I didn't. I honestly thought about doing a giveaway for the podcast, but then I was like, I'd rather keep it. That was the plan, and then I got it in the mail, and I was like, this is really cool. I'm definitely kidding. And then I went and bought a frame. I bought a frame for it. Like, I'm committed to having this.
So much for media unbiased there, huh? That's amazing. Yeah. All right, I can't say I blame you, but yeah, at the same time, I understand why you kept the picture.
All right, well, that's it, I think, for Free Talk Friday. Send us your mailbag questions for next week, lockedonheat@gmail.com, or you can tweet us using the hashtag AskLOHeat. That's it. Have a great weekend.